Now we turn again this morning to that portion of Scripture that we've been looking at on recent Sunday mornings, the 40th chapter of the prophecy of Isaiah. And I want to come to the conclusion of that chapter this morning, so I'm going to take as my text the verses 27 to the end of the chapter. Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 27. Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God? Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increaseth strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. I think those verses, particularly the last four of them, are probably the most well-known in that whole 40th chapter of Isaiah. They're probably verses that some of you would turn to, perhaps when you were at your wit's end and wondered how on earth you were going to cope, and you were looking for a promise of God, and somehow or another your attention was drawn to these verses in particular, and you find that not only from a literary point of view were they great and wonderful, but spiritually, they said to you what you needed to be reminded of about God. And perhaps you'd come to them feeling rather sorry for yourself, and you left them full of praise to God and with a renewed confidence in God. Well, I've been preaching on this 40th chapter now for 2 or 3 weeks, and I want just to remind you of the two great things that we've looked at so far. You could summarize it really in two verses. First of them in verse 1, and then the other one in verse 9. Verse 1 reads like this: comfort ye, my people, saith your God. And really, that's what the chapter as a whole is about. And indeed, not just this chapter, but I think you can argue that the remainder of the book of Isaiah, it's a book of comfort and encouragement. What God has in mind is a terrible situation that was going to come upon his people, came upon them because of their sin and the judgment of God that was to descend upon them. They were going to go into exile in Babylon, and that was a terrible thing. And yet, they were not to think that God had forgotten them. And so here is a promise from God, a command from God, that they are to know the comfort of God. And really the whole of the chapter, indeed, I say so much of the remainder of this book of Isaiah, they are words of comfort and of encouragement. So that's the first great thing that comes from this chapter. And that's why I think the chapter opens in the way in which it does. Comfort ye, my people, saith your God. But then, as you come on to that ninth verse, let me read it all to you. O Zion that bringest good tidings, get thee up into the high mountain. O Jerusalem that bringest good tidings, lift up thy voice with strength. Lift it up. Be not afraid. Say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God. And that, of course, is something that integrally is connected with that word of comfort in the opening verse. Because God doesn't simply tell us that we're to feel comforted and to know some sort of subjective encouragement in our hearts. He gives us reasons why we should be comforted. And the big reason is that we're to behold, we're to look at, we're to contemplate our God. And really what he then goes on to do, and That is done in the bulk of the chapter that we read, not this morning, but I think the first time I preached on it, but I deliberately have not gone in any detail into what it's saying. But there, what God is doing is to set before us something of the nature, the power, the majesty, the glory of God. And you see, that's what the prophet is being told to say to the cities of Judah. Behold, your God. You're there in exile in Babylon. You feel very sorry for yourselves. You wonder what on earth God has been doing with you. Why should he have judged you in this way? You say it's because of your sin. And so can there be any hope for you? And you're cast down. You're totally disconsolate. Well, you're to be comforted. And the way in which you're to be comforted is to look at your God. And so I say the bulk of the rest of the chapter does just that. It looks at God. And we'll begin this morning by doing what the prophet tells us we should do. Look at God. It's not something that people habitually do today, is it? God, well, he isn't relevant. That's the common attitude. If you're religious, if you act like you people this morning and you go to a place of worship, you're probably looked upon as oddities and peculiarities in the modern world. People that believe in God. And people probably very condescendingly would say of you, well, they're the sort of people that need that type of thing. We don't. We're able to stand on our own feet. But those people, they need some sort of prop to help them through the difficulties and troubles of life. They call it God. We don't really believe that there is such a person. Well, yeah, this chapter, I think, is the great answer to that lie that's spoken about God. Because what it's doing is to set before us the God who I think could be described as the incomparable God. At a number of points in these verses, in the center of the chapter, what you find God doing is to invite people to compare him. Compare him with the idols, for example, that some people bow down before and worship, to compare him with the creation that he has made. And then, as they behold their God, so they should be comforted and encouraged, and as they realize what a great and mighty God he is, this incomparable God. He's the God who is infinite. You can't put any limits upon him. He's the God who is all-powerful, and therefore there's nothing that's too hard for him. It's as if these are the basic elementary truths that the prophet Isaiah is getting across to us about God. And his wisdom is absolute. Nobody has ever had to give him any advice. He was never stumped, as it were, in the process of creation and turned to some other beings in order to find out what to do next. He needed no advice. He is the all-wise God. And then what the prophet does is to give us an indication of what I suppose we think in this world is something of the world's greatness and majesty. We look at the great nations of the world, the great civilizations, you might say, of the world. And, well, if you've ever studied any history, you know that what people tend to do is to glorify nations, to glorify perhaps particularly their own nation. And they read history in a certain way and they interpret it in a certain way. And it's all designed to glorify that particular grouping to which they belong. Well, as you read a chapter like this, you begin to get things into perspective. All nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing and vanity. That puts it all into perspective, doesn't it? And then you might say he deals with something that you might think is almost irrelevant to us today, but certainly wouldn't have been irrelevant to them. And I think when you understand it aright, you'll see that it isn't irrelevant to the modern world either. He deals with the question of idolatry. And you know what idolatry was in that situation? They said that God is great and God has to be worshipped. And so we want something tangible that will represent God to us. We want an idol. And so the prophet, he describes how they cut down a tree and the various skilled workmen, they come and they use their skills, the goldsmith and so on, and they fashion an image and then they set it up and then they worship it. But of course, if they want to move it, they have to lift it up and carry it. Although they're calling it God, it doesn't have any power of its own, and it's just a figment of their imagination. And you might say, well, of course, we don't do anything like that, do we? We are never tempted in that way to be idolaters. But you know, anything that you make, anything that's humanly devised, whether it's a thought that's in your mind, or whether it's an actual idol in the way that's described here, anything that you construct and that you then depend upon, that is an idol, and it isn't God. And so what the prophet is doing repeatedly is to tell us that God is real, God is true, God is not an idol, God is the infinite, the eternal God. And he invites them repeatedly, I say, to ask this simple question: to whom then will you liken me, or shall I be equal? And then again, to enable us to get things into perspective, he tells them to do something that we can still do. Lift up your eyes on high, and behold, who hath created these things, that bringeth out their host by number? He calleth them all by names, by the greatness of his might, for that he is strong in power. Not one faileth. Go out on a starry night, look at the heavens, see the infinite number of stars and heavenly bodies up there above you. Who's responsible for them? God. It's as if he spread them out just as you might. Some of you perhaps have a tent at home and you put it up, and you perhaps sometimes you slept in the tent and you've looked up and you've seen the roof of the tent. Well, it's as if the sky is the tent that God has erected there. And those innumerable stars and heavenly bodies, he's named them all, he knows them. Are you astronomers? Some people, they call themselves that, don't they? And they're able to tell you what the different clusters and groupings of stars are. They can tell you their names. I think if you really pressed me, I might be able to tell you two or three of them. I used to know more, but I don't know very many now. But God knows every one of them, because he has made each and every one of them, and he knows them. Lift up your eyes on high, behold, who hath created these things, that bringeth out their host by number. He calleth them all by names, by the greatness of his might, for that he is strong in power. Not one faileth. He's the one that sustains them. And you see what he's doing? He's saying, you wonder why I said to you, comfort ye my people? I did it because I wanted you to behold your God. I wanted you to see what God really is like, his infinity, his power, his majesty, his glory, his wisdom. They're all utterly incomparable. That's really the message that he's bringing out again and again. And why is he doing it? Well, he's doing it, I think, because of the first verse of my text. Listen to it. Verse 27. Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God? It's as if he says, I know what you're thinking. I know you've come to this conclusion. You're looking at your circumstances in life. You're looking at the fact of the judgment of God upon the nation. You're looking at the fact that you're there in exile. And the conclusion that you're coming to is that God has forgotten about you. that you're too insignificant, you're too unimportant for God to be concerned about you? Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God? That's what you're thinking, isn't it? But you know you're wrong. And if you've beheld your God, as I've been exhorting you to in this chapter, you see how absolutely contradictory that way of thinking is of God himself. God is so great, but his greatness means that he can stoop down to you. He can be concerned about you. He can care for you. So comfort ye, comfort me, comfort ye, my people, saith your God. Lift up your voice, be not afraid, say to the cities of Judah, behold your God, and this God is your God. And then he goes on to apply it very simply and very wonderfully. Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? And you know, that's a verse that you need to pause over. It isn't just a string of titles about God. Each of them tells us something about God. Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God? Have you thought that truth about God? How old is God? He's infinitely old. From everlasting to everlasting. Without beginning. Without end. Now that God is your God. The everlasting God. And then if you've got the an authorized version in front of you, you notice the next description, or the next title, the Lord. And the word is spelt in capital letters. And that's always a sign in the Old Testament that it's the word that sometimes is more or less transliterated into English as Jehovah. And it's a very special name about God. It means that he's the covenant God, a God who makes promises, and the God who therefore keeps promises. Unlike you and me, we often say things, we mean well, but maybe we change our mind, our circumstances become too difficult for us, and we aren't able to perform what we've promised. But God is never in that situation. The Lord is the covenant-keeping God, the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth. This is the one that your God. He's made everything. He has spoken the word, and creation came into existence. Now this is the God that I've been exhorting you to behold, to look at, to contemplate and think upon. This great God, the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth. And you know something about him? He doesn't faint. He doesn't grow weary. We do, don't we? Sometimes it's as if everything is too much for us and we give up. We can't take any more. We can't do it. We aren't strong enough. God isn't like that. The Lord, the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, he fainteth not, neither is weary. And then maybe sometimes when you're faced with a problem, you're baffled by it. You'd like to do something, but for the life of you, you can't work out what you should do or what you could do. And so listen to this about God. There is no searching of his understanding. There's no problem that's beyond him. There's no situation for which he is unable to bring the solution to it. There's no searching of his understanding. So, you see, Isaiah is telling us, as we've looked at God, as we realize something of the greatness of God, we take all those great truths and we tie them down to ourselves. What does that mean as far as you and I are concerned, in whatever predicament we might find ourselves in? Well, listen to this. He giveth power to the faint. To them that have no might, he increaseth strength. This is the character of God. He's able to come to those who in and of themselves, they're so faint, they haven't got what it takes. But he's able to give them that which they lack. He gives power to the faint. To them that have no might, he increaseth strength. He's the God who not only is there, as it were, as an abstraction in glory and majesty and greatness and power, but he's a God who comes right down to your situation, and he's able to help you when you're at your weakest and most desolate. And then he continues the illustration. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and young men shall utterly fall. So you might say he takes the examples of human beings who are likely to be able to do the greatest exploits. But he says, you know, there are situations that are too hard for those to cope with. The young men, the youths, they just faint. They're weary. They utterly fall. They aren't able to do what's needed to be done. So you take the greatest example of human strength, and it fails you. But, and I wonder if you've ever noticed that word in the scriptures. It's a word, almost whenever we read it, we ought to sit up and take notice. What's it telling us about God? It's a word that should jolt you back on your heels, because you realize that it's speaking of a situation perhaps in which you find yourselves to be totally inadequate, and then you get, but God. Remember that great example of it in the second chapter of the Epistle to the Ephesians. Remember this? You hath he quickened who were dead in trespasses and sins, wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, among whom also we all had our conversation in times past in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. Situation hopeless. But God, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in sins, hath quickened us together with Christ. He's telling us, you see, of the greatness and the glory and the sufficiency of the grace of God. And that's really what he's doing here. Yes, even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. And then he uses these in incredible illustrations. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. Perhaps you've seen on the television some of those nature programs, and you've seen some of the eagles soaring up seemingly effortlessly into the sky. Well, that's what God is able to enable his people in their weakness to do. Mount up with wings as eagles. Run and not be weary. Walk and not faint. So there's no situation in which you'll be unable to cope, because God is the God that gives strength. He gives strength to whom? To them that wait upon the Lord. And that means you come to him, you cast yourself upon him, you look to him for supplies of this strength, this ability that you don't have, but that he is able to impart. Comfort ye, my people, saith your God. Say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Remember who God is and what he's able to do for you. Amen.